Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. A to Z Sports Live. Adam Barazzani along with Zach Shapiro, Umar Khan on either side of the glass, and by the other side of the glass, I mean not yet online. We have a lot to get into tonight. An exciting Knicks victory over the Toronto Raptors in Canada. I don't know. I mean, we'll get into this next schedule, but it's been a brutal start in terms of scheduling for them. And they come out of the first eight games being 4-4, looking very impressive, very exciting. We'll talk some about the Jets and Giants past couple of weeks, as well as their upcoming matchups. Got a couple of big games this week, Thursday night featuring the Jets and Rex Ryan's Bills, and then Giants-Patriots, Super Bowl rematch on Sunday. Probably won't come out the Giants' way, but we'll talk about that as well. We might throw in a little Yankees-Mets talk. I know we didn't get the World Series recap in there. I don't know if Zach's going to want to talk about that, but we'll save that for the end. We got to start off with the Knicks, Zach. I mean, an exciting couple of weeks. Obviously, a lot of people didn't expect big things from them this season. They didn't expect Kristaps Porzingis to be as good as he is. Just give me your thoughts on the Knicks so far after these first eight games of the season.
Adam, you know, I'm a little surprised, you know. 4-4? I mean, where could I sign? I mean, someone told me that before the year. Run away from the Garden and playing all these tough, tough teams that, you know, they had no chance against last year. Wow. Just some big, big wins and really surprising wins. And to me, may have been their biggest, winning on the road in Toronto. The team played very well this year. They just go in there and they fight it out. You know, it wasn't easy, certainly. They had their great moments. They had some tough moments, too. But they really grinded this one out. And Lance Thomas to the rescue. I mean, wow. I was about to throw this guy off the ship days ago, but he came up huge tonight. Made some big plays in the fourth quarter, and it really helped the Knicks get the lead late and eventually the win.
Yeah, I'll be the first to admit I was not happy seeing big minutes from Lance Thomas tonight, but he proved me wrong. He had some big threes, and that's what he's got to do. He's going to need to hit those three-point shots to be a solid rotation player for this team. His defense was okay tonight. He made a couple of nice layups. Couple of big buckets and got some good rebounds to close out the game. Very impressive so far. But I mean, player of the game and possibly the player for the season so far has got to be Langston Galloway. He's been tremendous off the bench. I think he's shooting 65% from three in the first eight games of the season.
Wow.
He's been incredible. Umar, what do you think about Langston Galloway's start to the next season?
Hey, listen, I think Langston Galloway, one of the most underrated aspects of this game is that this guy is a stone-cold finisher. I saw a few stats today with Langston Galloway. Of all the players in the NBA, he's 7 of 12 when within 5 points with less than 2 minutes left in the game. That's unbelievable. That is a closer on an NBA team. 7 of 12 in his career within 5 points and less than 2 minutes ago in the NBA game. And he did it again here. He did it in the Laker game. And he does it again here. Is there a better closer right now in the NBA than Langston Galloway?
I mean, there probably
is.
And sorry to interrupt, Dan, but he was a plus 10 tonight, the biggest margin of all the Knicks. And, yeah, I mean, you got to say he's about 3 points shorter than the Knicks right now. I mean, obviously, he's shooting 65%. You would think maybe Calderon could be that player, maybe Vujicic, maybe Melo, maybe eventually Porzingis, but far and away, it's him, and he deserves those late minutes, because as we were saying, he's just making big shot after big shot after big shot, and Adam, it's been really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun time to be a Knicks fan. It looks like we should have a pretty competitive team this year who should be in the hunt for a playoff spot. Right now, you can make the argument they're the second-best team in their division. Even after tonight, you can say they're the best. Who knows? But, I mean, their schedule, like I said, has been tough. I want to read their schedule to you. The first eight games of the season has just been really brutal. Now, obviously, they just played Toronto. Their first why can't I find the schedule? Sorry. Their first.
It's Toronto's first home loss of the year.
Yeah, here you go. Yeah, they started off at Milwaukee, which they won. Then they played the Hawks. at the Wizards, which they won. Then home against San Antonio, on the road against LeBron and the Cavs, and Milwaukee, L.A., and Toronto. I mean, out of those teams, the only team that's really not good is Los Angeles, and they got that win. But they beat Washington on the road. They beat Toronto on the road. And, I mean, and they beat Milwaukee home in the first game of the season by a blowout. So they have some a pretty tough schedule, and they got a couple of good wins out of it. And hopefully they can build on that. It's going to be a tough back-to-back at Toronto, and they have to schlep all the way to North Carolina tomorrow to play the Hornets at Charlotte. So that's going to be a tough task, and then they come home and play LeBron on Friday. They have a tough schedule coming up. This season, I don't know, it just seems like there are a lot of back-to-backs a lot of teams. I'm not sure I like that. But, yeah, just give me your thoughts on generally their schedule so far, and I guess I kind of just asked you how they've been playing generally. So any other thoughts on tonight's game, Zach?
Well, you brought a quick point about back-to-backs. They're actually trying this. I think this year is the – I know it seems like they've been a lot early on the season, but this year they're trying to limit the amount of back-to-backs as much as possible. I think the average for a team is 17 back-to-backs, meaning 34 games, which is still a lot. Still a lot of games.
Yeah.
But it's actually the least it's been in a long time. But, yeah, the schedule, brutal. I don't like their chances tomorrow in Charlotte. That's a tough back-to-back. I mean, Charlotte hasn't been great this year, but still, going from Toronto to Charlotte, both games on the road, that's hard. Normally it's easier when you go home after the first game, but when you go to another road game, that's rough. And like I said, the schedule this month has been ridiculous. You know, because after Charlotte, they play Cleveland, New Orleans. New Orleans hasn't been good, but, you know, they have Anthony Davis, so they're always, they always have the ability to win, of course. And Charlotte again, then OKC, then Houston, Miami. December gets a little easier, but I mean, you know, this league is fast. This league has a lot of good teams, especially out west. So it's not going to be easy. But like you said early on, this team fights in every single game. You know, even the games that they've lost, they're in it till they're in the fourth quarter. They're in it. They're fighting. They're scrappy. You love Robin Lopez and also Porzingis. How much they fight on the boards every single play. And how much they want it. You could sense that they want these wins. They're really fighting hard, and these aren't just give up games. And so it's exciting in that way. You know, they're really battling.
Yeah, we're gonna get to Porzingis a little later on. I know Umar's got a strong take on him. But before we do, I just wanted to talk about what I noticed in tonight's game. And it seemed like to me watching the game, the first quarter, they played more of a team-oriented ball. Carmelo was really hesitant to take any shots in the first quarter. And I don't know if that was the game plan or if he just didn't like his matchup. I think it might have been the game plan. Just it makes sense from a game planning perspective to have the whole team take shots, considering they just warmed up. They just took their warm-up shots. You think they're somewhat warm shooting-wise. So let them take their shots instead of Melo take their shots early on. And in the second quarter, when players start getting a little cold, that's when you give Melo the ball, and that's when you play some isolation Melo ball. And he had a huge second quarter, 17 points. Umar, did you find that to be kind of interesting tonight?
Yeah. Just in general, I think Derek Fisher did a great job of coaching in this game. I'm always extremely vocal critic of Derek Fisher, as you know. I hate him. But he did a pretty good job this game. He showed up. He made some good calls, especially late in the game. I mean, it was really surprising when you're talking about crunch time, tight game, going up against the top team in the division on the road, and the guy who I think is probably the best talent on the team in Kristaps Porzingis was a guy who's on the bench for most of that big run towards the end of the game. Something really I would raise an eyebrow to, but Lance Thomas, who's playing for Porzingis, really shut me up. And really, Fisher and Thomas shut me up. Because Thomas was great. He was making great plays, really down the stretch, doing things that the team needed to do to win. Where Porzingis was, on the bench. He came in for a little bit and had a ball knocked off of his hand. So maybe Porzingis isn't ready just yet for the big spotlight of crunch time. But it was a great gamble. It was a great payoff by Fisher, and Fisher earned himself a little bit of respect, I have to say. Great, great job managing this game.
Yeah, they had to play the matchups this game, and it definitely seemed like Porzingis was on the bench How many minutes did he play tonight? Do we know? Was
he
it played, did he reach 20?
20 minutes.
Oh, he got 20. So that's probably his lowest. Well, I don't know if that was his lowest, but he wasn't. He only had a couple of fouls, right? Three fouls. Plus seven. I mean, he shot really poorly in the first quarter, but he did get some. He had that awesome putback. I feel like he does that every game now. It's really a Sports Center real type throwdown dunk. But all right, let's talk about Porzingis. Only 8 games into his young career, 20 years old, 4th pick in the draft. Everyone booed him. I don't remember exactly what our thoughts were on him, but I think once we all looked him up, we're all pretty excited. But I think all of us, to some extent, kind of understood that it would be more of a project, and we probably didn't think he would contribute this much right away. But it seems like he has, right, Zach?
Yeah, and you have a good point. It's certainly a little bit more of a project sense, and I think it's okay for the Knicks to do because they're not a team that's ready to win right now. It's hopefully building to win, not only soon, very soon, hopefully, but long term. And he came on, that first game, okay, a little iffy, but after that, he's just come on so strong and has played so with so much energy. You just want to watch him every second in the court because
offensive
you just
rebound.
Don't know what he's going to do next. He's fighting for boards. He has such a smooth stroke, such a smooth shot that you think that's going to go in almost every time. I mean, it's just that consistent and that fluid. And his free throws, you love how he shoots over 80% from the line. And he's battling for boards, which people were all concerned that he wouldn't. And he's just doing so much on the court. And he's just, again, he's so athletic for a guy that tall. It's almost astonishing how athletic he seems. He just moves around so easily. He's been great and really, really fun to watch. And I'm very happy at this point the Knicks drafted him. Umar, what are your thoughts?
Listen, I think you just watch Porzingis play out there on the court. He has such great awareness for such a young guy, getting to open spots on the court, and especially on those rebounds. I mean, those offensive rebounds more than anything else. The guy is just tremendous eye for the ball, ear for the ball, and right now he's not getting by on his athleticism. He's very tall. He's able to get some blocks and get some rebounds, but he's still raw on the athletic sense. You give him another few years of being in the league and of filling up his body. The guy's only 20 right now. You give him another few years, this guy will be an absolute force to be reckoned with. It's unbelievable the kind of potential that Kristaps Porzingis has. And he did it again today. You see him in literally every single game making a spectacular offensive rebound putback slam and posterizing someone. He does it relentlessly, and he did it again today. That's almost his trademark Porzingis, whatever, his trademark move, the Porzingis putback slam. So, I mean, this is always such a fun thing to watch. Carmelo Anthony is a great talent and everything, but he's Carmelo Anthony. He might shoot, 40%. Porzingis, again, shooting percentage isn't there yet. But, you cannot deny the talent that is on that court. He's unbelievable. And I think when we first drafted him, I think we all took a sort of, we were all really upset. We were all like, what? Who? Oh, no. And I think was it Moutier who was still out there, Emmanuel Moutier? But listen,
Moutier's actually been better than D'Angelo Russell. So I was kind of wrong about Russell.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, Porzingis, that was a tremendous, tremendous pick. And I'm really excited. This guy's got a great, great potential, man.
Now, Umar, do you see him being down the road a 4 or a 5, or does it matter?
No, this guy's not. He's not going to be a 5. Let's be honest here. He's not going to be a 5 down the road. This guy has too much shooting potential. I think his offensive game very squares up a lot to be like a more aggressive Dirk Nowitzki type. He's a very outside shooter, mid-range, outside three-point shooter type of guy. He's not a guy who's going to be backing down a lot. He doesn't have the size for it. So he's not a 5, although he plays great defense. He's going to definitely be a very, very good 4.
Okay. So Porzingis, all good things so far with the Knicks. Flalo should be back this week, I would think. I thought he was actually supposed to be back Sunday, but I guess that got pushed back a couple of days. I assume he'll be back either tomorrow or Friday. But, Zach, are any concerns at all, or are you happy – with the impending arrival of Aaron Aufalo to this lineup?
No, I think he'll be a nice addition. I mean, of course, there's always a concern of who's he's going to take minutes from. I guess one guy, I've had Lance Thomas is not on my in my doghouse. I guess the guy that now would be is Vujicic. He's not really impressed me too much. I mean, today he had a decent line, but again, he's not shooting as well as I hoped, and it's not making as many defensive, aggressive plays, or I don't know, or just more. I feel like he would cause a little more movement on the offense, get the ball around, maybe break down the defense. He just hasn't done that as I hoped he would. So if you take some minutes from Vujicic, I wouldn't mind. But of course, you know, losing someone like Galloway or Derek Williams, who besides today isn't really effective, I would hate for them those minutes, but I think he'd be a good addition, Adam. So I'm excited to see him on the court.
Yeah, hopefully he should be back soon. I assume he's going to be taking over the starting two spot. Vujicic might not get many minutes after that. But although tonight they played 13 guys, so you never know. So I think that was like one of the first. Not many teams play 13 guys in a given night. So
no.
That kind of shows how much depth the Knicks are working with right now. Their bench has been relatively okay. I mean, it's slowed down as of late, well, except Galloway. But Derek Williams has been impressive at times. I don't think Fisher trusts him enough to give him six-man type minutes. He's still more of a rotation guy. But he definitely trusts minutes to Galloway and his young rookie point guard, Jeremy Grant, who's quietly done a good job. Tonight he had a kind of rough game. But overall, Jerian Grant has not played like a rookie. He's played like a veteran at times. He seems to be like a good addition to this Knicks backcourt. Umer, thoughts on Jerian Grant?
Listen, this is what the Knicks were signing up for, Adam. You talk about a guy who spent 4 years in college basketball. He's a mature point guard who knows how to make the plays. He is a tremendous finisher. The only weakness really is the jump shot. But this guy is a tremendous asset to this New York Knicks offense, especially coming in, you know, his first year. I thought it was a great, great draft pick, and I know you were pretty high on the draft pick when the Knicks took it,
yeah.
And he hasn't been disappointing. So this is really exciting to watch him and Porzingis both play and both mature, and they're both going to get better. Even though Jerian Grant is sort of a finished product, he's still new to the league, and he's going to also improve and continue to get better. Really great things coming out of this New York Knicks team.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the conclusion we're all arriving at right now, is how impressive this team has been. The future looks pretty good, even though Melo is not going to be around for much longer. At least we have some building blocks. So I think the game plan for this season is to make the playoffs, not have too high a draft pick because they don't have theirs this year, and then try to make some noise in the playoffs. I mean, it seems like they compete with Toronto. Obviously, they can compete with Washington and Milwaukee. It's going to come down to whether or not they can have big games against Cleveland. They played well the first game, obviously, playoffs. But you never know in the playoffs. So hopefully they get there. Hopefully they're healthy. And then, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. So it should be a fun year. Let's just wish them well. I think they will prove their doubters wrong overall, and it should be exciting. So that was the Knicks. Let's move on. Unless anyone have anything else to add, let's move on to the NFL. Big games this week, but let's do a quick recap of the past few weeks for both the Jets and Giants. Start with the Giants. Who are they still top of the division? I guess they're still leading the division. And
yep.
What is I can't tell, Zach. My first question to you. Is the NFC East good or is it bad? It seems bad to me.
I would say it's bad. It's a bad division. Cowboys are riddled by injuries, and the Eagles, bad. It's bad. So the Giants are getting a little bit of a lucky break in that sense. You know, they aren't necessarily complete in some ways. Their defense has shown to be very poor throughout the year. Their offense has been inconsistent, but hey, you know what? You take what you get. And right now, the Giants are unfortunately breaking that way and won a big game last week against the Buccaneers. A Buccaneers team that was starting to make a push maybe towards getting into the playoffs. Giants maybe sort of ended that last week with winning 32-18 in Tampa. Eli was good, not great. You know, you did like that, you know, the Giants were able to get JPP back in the field. And while he didn't have a sack, I don't know if he even had a tackle, he was just very – he was effective. He was helpful. He put some pressure on the quarterback, made Winston, you know, his way a little more nervous in the pocket. And I think despite everything we've gone through this year with him and that ridiculous oven mitt he was wearing throughout the game, I think he could be a big key for the Giants on the stretch and hopefully help them, you know, seal up the defense a little bit more and make a run at the postseason. Boomer, what do you think?
Yeah, listen, Zach, I kind of agree with you. You know, the NFC East is not really a force to be reckoned with, but they don't need to be.
No.
You look at historically, even if the team makes it, like the Giants a couple of times making it at 9-7, 10-6, they can go on to get hot and win the Super Bowl. So right now,
those are
all
different
you can do
teams,
is,
though. Those are different teams. Come on.
People were saying that about the Giants team that they won the second Super Bowl compared to the one that won the first Super Bowl, but they still defied the odds and did it. I mean, if you think about it, think about this, the only team since 2008, since the start of the 2008 calendar year, to not be beaten by the Patriots are the New York Giants. They're the only NFL team to have not been beaten by the Patriots since 2008. That's pretty unbelievable. And right now the Giants are facing a huge task against the Patriots. That doesn't really mean anything because the Giants are pretty much going to get their butts handed to them over this week. But, you know, nevertheless, I think the Giants are starting to get a little healthier. They're right now in first place. The Cowboys and the Eagles are sort of waddling in their own sorrow right now. And, yeah, JPP was a great addition. Like Zach said, it didn't show up in the box score, but in advanced metrics, Peter Paul was the third best defensive lineman in the entire league last week in terms of getting pressure to the quarterback. It was unbelievable. So it's a tremendous upgrade in this defense, and it's really exciting to see on the Giants side. And hopefully the Giants continue to get healthy. You know, it's not going to be next week, but hopefully in another few weeks, cross your fingers, hopefully Victor Cruz will find his way to be back, as well as a demolished defensive, you know, linebacking crew with Beeson and an offensive lineman. You know, if the Giants just keep getting healthy, I mean, I think good things are going to happen, and they can get hot in the right time going into the playoffs. So
yeah, but they
I
lost,
think
they lost their best. Didn't they lose? They just lost their best defensive lineman.
Hankins is out. Yeah, that's true. Hankins is out. But, again, this is something where the Giants have taken the hits, and they've kept rolling with it. I'm always like, with the Giants, it's very unique, because the Giants are a team where any given Sunday, they can beat any team in front of them, any team, like the Patriots, for example, and any given Sunday, they can lose to any single team, no matter how bad they are. So it is honestly a coin flip every single week with the New York Giants. There's no question in my mind. It's just, I think it's going to be an interesting situation.
I just do not see them even being competitive on Sunday against the Patriots. I know they beat them in two Super Bowls, but this is just a different Giants team. And honestly, this might be a different Patriots team. Patriots are definitely out there trying to prove something. I don't know who's going to cover Gronk. The Giants' safety are not up to the task. It seems like the Patriots' running game is getting better, and the Giants' running game defense is getting worse. This just does not seem like a good matchup for the Giants right now. I honestly, I wouldn't even be surprised if Tom Brady's thinking about those two Super Bowl losses, because he just tries to motivate himself so much. He's such a competitor. I hate him, but he really is a great competitor. I don't see this game being close. So let's get our predictions for this Sunday. Giants at home against the Patriots. Zach, what's your prediction, and how do you think the game will go?
I just want to jump in, man, because you made some points there, certainly. The Patriots have been great this year. But something that does stand out to me is that they have been, yes, they've been very good, but they haven't been as convincing as maybe, I don't know, the back page of the show. Because, I mean, look, they barely beat Pittsburgh and Buffalo. They only, I mean, yes, they were out by a lot. They only won by one score. They crushed Jacksonville, but most of the teams crushed Jacksonville. They won at Dallas, and Dallas is out Rome, so you can't credit them really much there. At Indianapolis, who's been up and down this year, they only won by one score. Barely beat the Jets. You could say Brandon Marshall caught that pass in the end zone. The Jets would have won that game. Then they crush Miami, and then, of course, beat Washington, who stinks. So I don't know if they really had a poor signature win this year.
Their offense has been so consistent,
though. I do think this game is going
to
be close. But I do think the Patriots are going to win. So I have the Patriots winning this game. Let's go with 35-28.
Boomer.
Good. Totally dig it. I see that the Patriots are 7.5-point favorites. I just think the Giants would cover. But again, I do not think that the Giants can beat the Patriots in the regular season right now. But hey, you know what? Honestly, I think it's pretty fair to say that, you know, we may not beat them this Sunday, but February 7th, when we see them again, might be another situation. So you think about Tom Brady being all motivated. You don't think he was motivated when he faced the Giants after the Giants beat him when his undefeated season? Well, guess what? He lost against the Giants. So I don't care if the Patriots beat us this year, because come February 7th will be another story.
Exactly. Bringing up some good points. I watch them, and it just seems like their offense is nearly unstoppable.
No, I agree. I guess you could argue at the end of the year, their three biggest games, or four, I should say, are the two against the Jets, the one in Denver in a few weeks, which will be huge, and then maybe against the Giants. I mean, those could be their schedule is not that hard. I mean, granted, you know, yeah, I don't know how they get this kind of schedule after having the year they have this year, but whatever. Let me go back to you.
Yeah, I mean, another good thing to bring up here for this particular game is that the Patriots will be without their receiving running back, Deion Lewis. He's out for the year. I didn't see if they signed anyone to replace him. I think they might be using James White a little bit more in passing situations. But that definitely hurts. I mean, knowing the Patriots, they'll find someone off the street and he'll have an amazing second half. But I don't know if they signed anyone yet, so that they might not have that guy on the roster right now. So that's a threat that the Giants won't have to worry about. Although they do have to shut down LeGarrette Blount, who's been warming up recently, had over 120 yards last week. They have to shut down the running game. They need to make them a one-sided offense. And someone's going to need to shut down Gronk. I don't know who's going to be doing that. I mean, it takes more than one guy, obviously, but they're going to have to shut down Gronk. And then they're going to have to play one-on-one with Edelman on the in the slot. I don't know enough about the Giants to know if their corners are up to that task, but they're going to have to double or play zone against Gronk, have their best one-on-one receiver on the slot working against Edelman. And then you got to make the Patriots wideouts like Brandon LaFell beat you, because those are the guys you got to make beat you in order for them to win. So that should be the game plan for the Giants. I just don't think they're up to the task. I think Jonathan Hankins is a big loss, and I think the Patriots are actually going to run the ball fairly well against the Giants this week. So I'm going to go with the 35 point. That Zach brought up. So I'm going to go 35-24 Patriots. So that's good for the Giants. We could talk about 2 weeks ago, terrible loss against the Saints, but we'll just pretend it didn't happen. Let's go to the Jets quickly. I'll let you guys talk first. I don't know I know you guys are watching and following them. Not as much as the Giants, but. They needed the win against Jacksonville on Sunday. They got it. Wasn't pretty, but they needed it, and they treated it like a must-win. For Ryan Fitzpatrick's playing through a sprained torn ligament, and Chris Ivory's just been completely ineffective. So that's obviously a concern. But, they needed to win on Sunday, and they did. So now they're 5-3. Big game on Thursday against Buffalo. This will pretty much... this is actually a huge game. We'll talk about that last, but I want your thoughts first on the Jets playing the Jags this past Sunday. Boomer.
Yeah, listen, the Jets, like you said, that was a must-win game for the Jets, especially coming off that awful game against Oakland. Can you just talk about Cromartie for a second? First of all, I think Cromartie should be
doing some more returns, because I think he might be the most, you know, lethal player on the Jets when it comes to playmaking. But, you know, and Fitzpatrick, he's very – listen, Ryan Fitzpatrick is, I think, as he goes, the Jets go at this point in the season. Earlier on in the season, I was thinking that he's really – if he plays a big role, it's a bad job for the Jets. But I honestly think as he goes, the Jets go. And he was almost, you know, the play where he injures himself, it's sort of inexcusable, to be honest with you.
Was this inexcusable?
Inexcusable. Inexcusable.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that that's more, that's a bad thing. Yeah, Adam, I want to hear your thoughts on Cromartie and
All right. Yeah, that was obviously a bad play. He's not going to be running the ball as much more. He's actually – I think he's in surgery on Friday after the Thursday night game, and that should allow him enough time to heal that thumb. But he's not running it as well. I guess I don't remember him scrambling much last week. He was pretty much averaging 25 yards on scrambles before that injury, so that takes a little bit out of his game, although he threw well last week. As far as Cromartie goes, I've been down on him the whole year, even from week one. He's like a guest hitter in baseball. He really just tries to jump the route if he's wrong and ends up being a big play for the opposition. So that he doesn't have the speed, the recovery speed to catch up at this point. So honestly, the only reason he's starting at this point is because he knows the defense. And they're paying him big money, but they're going to need to address that. They're probably going to cut him after this season. They're going to need to address that next year. Zach, what were your thoughts on this past couple of weeks for the Jets?
Well, you know, first of all, you give Fitzpatrick a lot of credit hanging in there. I mean, Geno Smith was just an absolute disaster out there in Oakland, so he really had no choice but to step in and play. And you give him a lot of credit for that. I mean, he's really been, I don't know, at least in my mind, look, I don't watch Jets as much as you do, but in a sense, he's been the heart and soul, at least of this offense and maybe of this whole team. You know, he's been just doing everything he can to get these Jets these wins. Because like you said, the running game, especially Ivory, has been really scary. And you look at, you know, the last three games, the high rusher on the Jets was Ivory 41, Geno Smith 34, and Ivory with 26. I mean, really, really bad. But they almost won all. I mean, at least they could have won New England. I had a tough time last year in Oakland, but you know, certainly won in Jacksonville. Wow, Fitzpatrick. I mean, he's just been really stepping up to the plate, and you really got to appreciate that as a fan. So you hope, you know, he can get through this week okay, and then get that surgery perhaps on Friday, and have 10 days to recover from it. He's not, obviously he's not your long term solution, Fitzpatrick. He's a short-term gap, but hey, you know, he gave it up for him. He's been battling. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Well, wait,
Adam, before
you give it, you know, there's a little positivity going around the Jets right now. If I could just play devil's advocate for a second, you know, I don't really believe this, but 381 yards for Blake freaking Bortles and close to 500 total yards allowed. And you talk about 23
Jaguars
carries.
Jaguars offense is not that. They're not. They have two good receivers.
Oh man! Well, how about 23 carries by Big Time Ivory for 26 yards and in a potentially disastrous fumble at the end? So there were some big failures in that game against Jacksonville. So even though it was a must win game, they got the win. They're going to have to clean up their act if they're going to take down Rex Ryan and the Bills, who they haven't beaten in their last three meetings against them. And, you know, with IK and Impoli being the captain of the team, you know, big time rivalry going on. It's going to be a fun game.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. I do want to defend Zach and I, though. We weren't really too high on their win against the Jags. I think we kind of said that it was a must win. They got it done. And I'm pretty sure I said it wasn't pretty. But as far as what you said, what did I want to talk about? Zach, when you said Geno Smith didn't play well, he wasn't actually that bad when he was in against Oakland. He had one bad interception, but other than that,
he played fairly well. So I do want to give him some credit there. The reason why we lost in Oakland was because the defense just didn't show up. And then Umer, the Jags offense is pretty, I mean, it's pretty good. They're putting up some good numbers in the passing game this year. And then as far as the Jets rushing offense, I think Mangold's been hurt the past few weeks, and I think that's really taken its toll on the running
killer.
Attack.
Look, in the Jets' past three games, Ivory has 84 yards on 55 rushes. That's 1.5 yards per rush. This is a guy who was leading the league in rushing yards, playing like two fewer games than the number two guy. And he's had 84 yards on 55 rushes. Boy, is that a dingness.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's partly, you know, he's been banged up a little bit, but I think the offensive line has also been banged up. Brandon Marshall's been quite the player. But, yeah, as far as the Jacksonville Jaguars, two wide receivers, Allen Robinson is on pace for 1,400 yards this season, and Allen Hurns is on pace for, like, 1,250 yards this season. So they have two good wide receivers. And they actually Oakland also has two good wide receivers. So those are the types of teams that apparently the Jets might struggle with the two athletic wide receivers. Buffalo has Sammy Watkins. I mean, they should be able to shut him down. They're number two, not as good as the guys they've faced, so hopefully that's somewhat of an advantage going in. I mean, the drama is already unfolding. Like, Rex Ryan making Ikem Kampali a captain is just ridiculous. Like, what kind of league is this? It's a joke. Like, he was wearing a helmet during his Clemson helmet during his press conference today. Like, this guy's just nuts. He's just trying to. I mean, obviously, I defended him when he was on the Jets, but at this point, it's just getting sick. I'm sick of his act, and it's just kind of annoying at this point. Zach, as kind of being an objective outsider, what do you make of the Rex Ryan making Nkampali a co-captain for this game?
I mean, from what I've heard, Adam, it's something that he's done not only this year, but in the past, even with the Jets. I mean, I think he's just trying to get under the skin of, you look at track record. I don't know if it's exactly worked the past few years, especially with how the Jets have gone. But, hey, you know, he realizes this is probably their biggest game of the year, a game that if they win couldn't really help turn around their year or at least propel them to the playoffs. And, yeah, maybe he's looking to let electrify under his guys by doing something like this. But to the Jets, you hope that this can light electrify under your players and get them fired up because – the guy in the preseason was inexcusable. So you hope that the Jets are even more fired up and better, Adam, for that.
You know what? I wish it would, but I have a feeling most of the players probably sided with him over Geno Smith at that point. So I don't really know if it will.
True.
But I think they're just going to be fired up because it's Thursday night and it's a huge game. If they win this game and they're 6-3, That's absolutely huge. That will put them in a such good position to make the playoffs this year. And that would also kind of deal a big blow to Buffalo's chances because Buffalo has such a hard schedule coming up, whereas the Jets have a very easy schedule. Buffalo, after Thursday night against the Jets, they play at New England and then at – actually, their schedule isn't that bad. Never mind. but this is a big game for both teams, obviously. Miami's pretty much out of it at this point, and these two teams, the Buffalo and Jets, will be chasing the wild card. Winning this game obviously has a good chance at winning them one of the wild card spots. If Buffalo loses, I think they're done. But if the Jets lose, I think they still have a shot. But this might be a must win for Buffalo, so it's going to be a tough game. Let's get our predictions around the horn. Umer, we'll start with you. Jets versus the Bills Thursday night.
Jets Bills Thursday night. This is actually going to be a real good game, but I think the Jets will squeak it out by about 3 points. I think it won't be a big high scoring game. I'll see the Jets winning about 17-14. And how about this? When Ikem Polly's on the field, everyone gives him a nice standing ovation because he's probably a big chip for the Jets because he his assault kind of turned the Jets season around and turned in a good way.
Good point, Zach.
Yeah, that definitely happened because without him, Fitzpatrick wouldn't be starting, perhaps. But I do agree with him. I do think the Jets will win this game. They are 2.5-point favorites. Doesn't mean much. But that's what the line is. But I do have them tweaking this game out, too. It won't be tremendously high scoring. I think it will be fairly defensive in terms of, you know, mostly defense will play well on both sides. So the Jets win this game. Final score, let's go with T1-15. Adam.
In these types of games, Rex Ryan, I know Rex Ryan is up all night trying to scheme and plan how to win this game because he has so much at stake going against his former team in prime time. I can't go, I don't think I can go against Rex Ryan in spots. If the Jets are playing better, I might be inclined to pick the Jets. But no rushing attack. Offensive line banged up. Brandon Marshall banged up. Everyone seems to be banged up on the Jets. It's the Thursday night game, a short week. If they're going to win, they're going to need to. The events are going to have to play amazing. Well, I'm just not sure it can at this point. Offensively, I don't think they have a running back, so I don't know what they're going to do offensively. They're just going to throw to Marshall, but I think Rex Ryan knows that, and he's going to game plan for that exact outcome. So I think the Bills are actually going to win. I don't think it'll be a blowout because I don't think either team really at this point has the capacity to blow out the other. So I'm going to go with the Bills 17. It should be close, like 17. Could be 17-16. It could be like a last-second field goal. But I just have a feeling the Bills are going to win this one. So that should wrap up our Jets Giants previews. You guys have the NFL schedules in front of you?
Yes.
All right. Do you have the point spreads or no?
I do have the spreads. This is from ESPN.
That's probably fine.
Yeah, sounds good.
You want to do picks? Just pick your three best bets of the week with the spreads. And then we'll move on. So whoever is ready can go first. You can do one at a time. That'd be easier. One at a time.
Okay.
All right. So you go first.
Let's see.
Okay, you go first.
No, here's one I'm going to lock down, okay? I never go this high because this team is an 11.5-point favorite, but I'm actually going to pick them because it's Green Bay playing at home against Detroit. Detroit really struggling all year. Green Bay, who's a great team all year until the last 2 weeks where they've been pretty much embarrassed. I thought last week that they'd really come back and show the world that they're not as bad as they look, and they've lost again. I think this week they're really going to come out with a vengeance, and I think they're going to cover that 11. They're going to win by more than the 11.5 against Detroit, especially at home. So Green Bay is my number one lock.
All right, Zach?
Yeah, for me, Anna.
This is a tough week.
I'm a little concerned about Pittsburgh this week. I know they played very well that Roethlisberger. I'm going to go with Cleveland getting the 4.5 or 5 points, depending on where you're looking, on the road. They are one of my big road upsets of the week. So Cleveland, +1.5 or 5.
Is Josh McCown quarterback or is Johnny Manziel quarterback?
I believe McCown, but don't quote me on that.
All right. I kind of like McCown a little bit more. I'm actually going with Pittsburgh. I think they're playing well. I'm going to take the 4.5 points of Pittsburgh.
Damn it.
And my second pick will be I like the way New Orleans is playing, and they're only a 1-point favorite. They're on the road, but I still like the way they're playing right now. Washington,
I'm sorry to interrupt you. They've killed me. I was in two Survivor Leagues this year. Lost both of them on them, losing at home. The second week, they lost to Tampa at home and a really close game in this past week to Tennessee. I am never betting on them again in Survivor. Killed me both times. And cool. So you should pick,
you should pick the Redskins.
Anyway, sorry. But, I mean, yes, they play very well against the Giants, their offense, but their defense, oof, oof, scary. Sorry to interrupt you.
All right, well, that was my pick. So
all
that
right, so yeah,
go
I'll
now.
Go then. And I have Denver home. I think Denver's a 6.5-point favorite. I think they're looking to bounce back from what was a tough game in Indianapolis.
Good pick.
Against Kansas City, a team that's playing better lately, but is just not that good. So, in my opinion, so I have Denver winning this game by more than 6.5 at home. Ooh, second pick.
Seattle -3. I think they have a lot to prove, and they're home in a place that's really tough to play in. Even though they're playing against probably one of the better teams in the entire NFC, I think it will come down to the wire. But because Seattle's home, because they're a little bit more desperate, I think that they're going to win by more than 3 points.
And your third?
Why weren't you prepared? You knew we were going to go around.
Yeah, it was in the snake draft.
Did you guys give all three of your picks already, though?
No, we were going to go back to you for two and then finish off with me with the last.
Let's do a reverse order.
All right, fine. I'll take New England 7 points. I got 7 points. Do you have 7 or 7.5?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll take
yeah,
whatever. Whatever. I'll take New England 7 or 7.5. I mean, I'll take 7. But if it's 7.5, I'll take that also.
There you go.
The
take the 7.5.
All right.
And my last pick, Adam, I don't know, I'm surprised this line is not bigger, but Carolina at Tennessee, the spread I see is only 4.5 to 6. I don't care what number it is you are, whether you're in Washington State or Florida, Maine, whatever. Take that number, please. Carolina will win this game by more than whatever it is on the road, keeping their perfect season going at the Titans, because the Titans are not that good. So, Carolina, Boomer.
I'll go with Pittsburgh -4.5.
God.
I think even Roethlisberger. Listen, D'Angelo Williams and Antonio Brown are absolutely lethal weapons. Combined for more yards combined than any teammates in NFL history.
No Bell or Roethlisberger. How can they win?
I think they can.
Oh yeah, I forgot Big Ben's not playing.
Yeah, that's what I'm going at. Hello.
Oh yeah, my bad. But Cleveland's pretty bad. But is Josh?
Yeah.
If Johnny Manziel's playing, then I mean, they have no chance. But if it's Josh McCown, that might be.
No, it's McCown is probable.
All right, so Zach's probably gonna win that one. So, all right, well, whatever. Me and Umar took the Steelers, so we'll.
Do you think Johnny Manziel's a good quarterback though?
No, he's awful.
Like he's like one of the middle quarterbacks in the league, or is he one of the bottom quarterbacks?
No, he's not a quarterback. He's not an NFL quarterback. I don't know why people keep saying give Johnny Manziel a chance. He's not an NFL quarterback. It's great to bet on because they make the spreads pretty good.
Look, he's got like an 85 QB rating. He's 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. That's not terrible. He's not a great completion.
What's his completion percentage?
It's probably around 50%, a little over 50%.
That doesn't win in this league. You gotta complete 60% of your passes to win this league. all right. So that's NFL. We got a few minutes left. I mean, I'm scared to bring it up. Zach, do you want to talk about it or no?
Why not? Why not?
He's going to do it.
Miserable. I mean,
right.
it was like all the years of bad losses and horrible finishes to the year put into one 5-game series. I mean, I don't know. I was talking about with other people today. So it's all I bring up these days. But, I don't think of a worse World Series loss in terms of how they lost all those games. I mean, you can think about Texas, how they lost one of their games against St. Louis where they, you know, were out of the way or strike away from winning the World Series and the blowing that game and then losing game seven. And then you think about the Red Sox against the Mets many years ago in 86. But, I mean, 3 games that they had, and 2 of them where they lost on errors, not like, you know, a great hit like, you know, it was a first inning game 1 or,
you know, an amazing rally by the Mets that gets stopped short. No, two bonehead errors and terrible decision making from so many players and coaches. Just what a mess, Adam.
I mean, you can keep going because I know you have a lot inside that you just want to let out.
You know,
I was invested in this team this year. Not as nearly as close as you were, but it was tough. It was tough watching those games. You know, three blown saves. I know all of the blame can't be put on Familia, obviously, because most of those were unearned runs. But it's a tough way to lose. At the same time, the Royals probably deserve to win. So
yeah,
it's not like they completely gave the series away. You know, the Royals have been one of the best teams in the league the past 2 years. They probably were. They deserve it. They really did. That the way they played was perfect. Was perfect to go against the Mets pitching staff, and a lot of people predicted that would happen, and it did. They didn't strike out as much except for the last game, and they put the ball in play and they made the Mets make plays, and it didn't work out. But you know, at the end of the day, you can't be too upset if you're a Mets fan, because yes, you don't know when you're going to make the World Series next. You know, it's really, really difficult to make
sure.
The World Series two times in a row. But you had to have fun this season, and you had to enjoy the ride. And I think for the most part you did. It was just a tough way to end.
Absolutely. And, you know, you could say, oh, playing the bullpen, you know, they were not good. You could say, oh, playing the defense, making the big plays. My biggest blame has to go on the Mets offense. I mean, you came to this series and the Mets would at least have a good chance on beating up on some of these Royals starters. Mm-hmm. The Royals starters came in like a 5.5 ERA this postseason going into the World Series. And the Mets, they did not hit them as well as they should have. Very, very upsetting with that. I mean, the first game, Volquez, they barely touched. Second game, Cueto just completely dominated them for all nine innings. The third game, yes, they hit well. That third game against Ventura, they got to his head a little bit early on and often. And then the fourth game against Chris Young, I was almost in the bottom of my seat watching how poorly they hit Chris Young. This guy throws junk, and this, just because his weird arm angle and how tall he is, they can't hit him. So frustrating to watch. And the final game, I think they got like two hits after like the second inning. It was just ridiculous. You would think they would try to generate some runs, you know, bunting or trying to get on base through a walk. Just, it was bad. And that was probably the most disappointing thing in this post series. And Sandy Alderson said it too. They just did not hit. And, you know, really hurt a lot of players in the eyes of the fans, especially Seth for this. Man, oh, man, did he come up small in the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to bring that up. What do you think the Mets' game plan is for this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, they just do nothing and go with what they have, but, you know, that's too big of a risk because, you know, you don't know what David Wright's going to be next year because, hey, you know, even if he plays 120 games, how effective is he going to be in those 120 games? Yeah, they're probably going to lose Murphy. They're probably going to lose Cespedes. But the guys who are filling their holes are not nearly as good of hitters as they are. The Mets are going to have to find a way to get some more power from the right-hand side. They have Darno. He was continually banged up this year and was inconsistent at the plate. Julio Yohovich
really
is more consistent from the left-hand side and give you more consistent power. But, you know, you need some more pop. This offense needs some more pop. The pitching can't carry you all year like it did this past year. You need to help them out with a little more offense. So, you hope Sandy can find a way to add something, add a piece, one way or another this offseason. You would think it's someone that could probably play, not left field, because that's where Conforto would play, but maybe someone that can help out in center. It's hard because you don't know where exactly to put people because every time you add someone, you lose someone else. So, I mean, of course, that's every sport and every game. But you don't know where you can exactly put the person, but the Mets do need to add some power because without that, like they had in August, they were not making the playoffs. So, Adam, we'll see where they go. Some of the pitching is there, and you love it, and it's very exciting. But, you know, you'd like to make a couple big pieces.
So, do you want to sign Murphy if they can get him for market, I guess, market value, or do you want to pass?
I don't know. If it's, of course, if they got him on this one-year deal, I would actually be, and the Mets would probably be upset about it. I'd be thrilled because I think the Mets need some protection for David Wright. Daniel Murphy's the perfect guy because he'll play third base as
right.
Wright has to step out.
Probably better third.
But,
well, yeah, probably
at the end
better
of the day,
base. He's
he's a tough – he could be a frustrating player to watch because he makes a lot of bonehead field, as we saw, with, of course, that with the ground ball. And he's not a good base runner. He's made a lot of base running mistakes. Ooh, this is tough. If someone told me sign Murphy 5 years for $60 million, would I do it? You know what? Yeah, I'd do it. Screw it. Because I don't know. I just don't know what else. But of course, I know what else is out there. But if someone told me that that's the only move that's going to this offseason, absolutely, I would do it, Adam.
All right, and my last Mets question to you, would you be willing to trade one of their young pitchers for Offit?
Oh, yeah, that's another big one I've been hearing. Oof. It's tough, you know. If I had to trade one, who would I trade? Man, oh, man. Syndergaard, the way he stepped up in that World Series, that one game was just unbelievable. I mean, it's so he gets so nearsighted with these players and these games. It's bad. And you know, even the way Harvey stepped up in that last game, I didn't like him going out in the ninth inning. He was the only person in the world who thought that, but I didn't like him going out there. But then with on battles, wow, really hard, Adam. Really good question, but
sorry.
At the end of the day. If that's the only move that they can make to get a big hitter, I guess they would have to do it. I would do it. Yep. It would hurt. It would sting, especially if that player goes on to being a Cy Young or just an unbelievable pitcher, as they probably will be. But they need to hit. And so if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. So, yes, I would do it.
All right. I'm sure we'll talk about that more when it gets closer to the winter meetings and – actually, I don't know if we're going to talk about them whatever it is, but I'm sure we'll try to talk about it again. It should be an interesting offseason for both the Mets and the Yankees. Cashman supposedly is strapped for cash a little bit, so I don't know what the Yankees are doing at this point. They're kind of in no man's land in some sense. Are you optimistic for the next season?
Yeah, I am. I am, and let me tell you why I am, and I think this should be optimism for both the Yankees and the Mets. It's because the goal
the Mets should be optimistic.
The goal, well, if you talk about the Mets, who are going to lose basically two of the offensive weapons that one of them carried them to the playoffs and one of them carried them to the World Series,
right.
You know, you might not, but you talk about the goal of any team should be to make the playoffs, okay? It's a very obvious – I used to be very disillusioned back in the early 2000s when the Yankees were not winning World Series left and right like they used to in the 90s, and every time the Yankees lost in the ALDS or the ALCS, I was thinking, well, what overhaul should they do in order to get to the World Series and win the World Series? And at this point, I've realized there is no overhaul to do. Once you are in October, it is honestly like – if you look at percentages of people that are playing in October, it's like a 58% winning percentage going up against a 56% winning percentage. Those are so close to one another, and that's the difference between a wild card team and the best team in the league. It's probably about 2 percentage points difference in terms of their record. It's always going to be so coin flippy, and it hinges on a single play. You could talk about a fly ball to left field that's misplayed, and that's a change of a game. Or a ground ball to second base that Daniel Murphy misses. That's a game that's one-fourth of what the Royals need to win the championship, 25% all on that one play. It is such a crapshoot once you get to October that your only goal should be how to get to October. And I think that the Yankees, honestly, being in an AL East division that's not very strong, and being a team that they really – I mean, they had good offensive pieces and good –
pitching pieces before Toronto got